You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to the Wheelhouse.
On a scale of 1 to 10, he's going to hit a 10 on every nice guy mark until he gets out on the mound. And then he's going to chew you up, and he doesn't really let you go.
Starring Jerry DePoto.
And Jerry DePoto to the plate with the 2-2 pitch to Alex. Swing and a miss. He struck him out on the fastball.
With Aaron Goldsmith.
To see what he's done this year, Jerry, to just despise walking guys even more than he did last year, to work the edges of the plate better than any starting pitcher, maybe better than any pitcher, period, in Major League Baseball.
And Gary Hill Jr.
That's Aaron's only way of scouting. He doesn't care about anything else except how they look coming off the
man,
bus.
Man, oh man.
It's time for the Wheelhouse. Here's Aaron.
Yes, it is the Wheelhouse Podcast, the first of the regular season in 2024. We're recording this before Game 1 of the Mariners-Reds series at T-Mobile Park. Aaron Goldsmith, Jerry Hill, Jerry DePoto. Jerry, it's wonderful to see you, my friend. How are you?
It is nice to be seen. And it's nice to smile for a moment. Yeah.
Well, you know, there are good things to smile about still. I know that this season has not gotten off to the start that anyone who has even an ounce of investment in the Mariners would hope for. When you have watched the Mariners over the first couple of weeks and change, what has stood out to you the most?
We're not doing the things that we have historically done to win games. And I think the thing that stands out the most, if I had one way to capture what we do best, is we don't usually beat ourselves. And I think here in the early going, you know, whether it's not converting the defensive play that we typically convert, it's giving up the extra base that we don't typically give up, it's not taking the walk that we usually take. Those little things that we've generally made our living on over the course of time here, we haven't done them very well in the early part of the season. And you know, it's going to be hard until we start playing better offense to really tap into a better version of our team. But this has been in all facets of the game. And, you know, positively here recently, I think the pitching has really started to normalize and we're getting back to what we do there and working ahead in counts. And the defense has started to stabilize and we're starting to convert a lot of those plays. And now the last element, like it's been for us for years, is figuring out how to get that offense motoring.
I think this time of year is the toughest to talk about baseball because it's all we've seen, so it's all we have to talk about. Yet, if you took this stretch in August or June, like you wouldn't draw any conclusions about a stretch during that time. But how do you watch the beginning of a season like this?
You know, I said this at lunch today, actually, with Justin and with Andy McKay. Every team is going to go through a stretch in a 16-game run like we've gone through, you know, where you go 6-10, you go 5-10 over 15. You know, part of the way we've, I guess, challenged ourselves is that you're not going to get multiple chances to do that over the course of a long season and still do the things that you want to do in the standings, in the, you know, with the end result in mind. So, you know, the biggest thing we need to do is just flush it, you know, understand that it is something we can't control. It's past. Focus on today's at-bats, today's innings, and do the things that we do and get back to playing a better brand of baseball than we've played.
There was some great emphasis put on Brant Brown joining the organization, a guy with a wonderful track record, rejoins the org after a number of years ago, offensive coordinator, bench coach, and the kind of processes maybe that he would help put in place. I was kind of curious during spring training, and I think we might have talked about this a little bit, like how do you practice that in the Cactus League, right? Because it's so different than here. After roughly 15 or 16 games, how has that gone? Do you feel like it's just a matter of execution? Is it still fine-tuning kind of the pregame type of work with Brant? How is that whole puzzle fitting together?
You know, I don't know that anyone could be expected in 2 weeks or even a spring in 2 weeks to transition an organization from one way of digesting information to another. You know, that's probably going to be unique to the listening ear. You know, it might be different for J.P. Crawford than it is for Ty France and than it is for Mitch Haniger. And I know that to be true. Each one of them, you know, processes it different ways. You know, and to that end, I think it's just going to take time for Brownie to establish whatever programs that are important to him. And we've had things laid in place as an organization, be it programs or systems of Scott's, of Jarrett DeHart's, you know, things that we've done organizationally, or the way our players like to ingest their information. So some of those, you know, adjustments need to be made. You know, there's also a very different hitting environment that exists in Arizona and early season.
Is that right?
Seattle, you know, as it works out. It's a, you know, and I think, you know, the warm, perfect weather, you know, it's a great place to hit. And to be fair, by comparison to other teams in that same environment, we crushed it in the spring. You know, our hitters, almost to a man, you know, they were capitalizing on doing the things that they've done, the best versions of them. You know, if it was Jorge and Mitch Garver, or if it was Mitch Haniger, who could never have been better than he was in the spring, and, you know, and Julio Rodriguez. And then the season started, and almost to a man, they're all off to slow starts, you know, with a few exceptions. And it's not abnormal to have a slow start. It's a little challenging when 7 of your 9 hitters on a given day are in that bucket. And, you know, what you can't do as a hitter is you just can't start reaching for straws and changing the thing you do, or not focusing on the thing you do best. Which, if I look at the organization as a whole, from a pitching perspective, you know, Woody and Trent are pitching people. What we have stressed and stressed very positively over time, and I guess by positive, I mean it has achieved results. We focus on what our pitchers do best, and then we lean them into that and help them lean into that. And then along the way, we'll pick one or two things that we can help them turn the dial on and get a little bit better. With the hitters right now, we're not really nailing that. We're not, you know, leaning into the thing that they do best. And right now, the result is you got a lot of guys reaching for straws. And you know, that happens in baseball. And you know, we just need somebody to run into something, hit a gapper. We haven't done too much damage. You know, it's maybe the most shocking part of our season isn't that we're hitting for a low average or we're not scoring a ton of runs. I think some of that, you know, can certainly be written off to early season struggle, different environments, what have you. It's that we're not doing damage. And, you know, our lineup up and down should be capable of that. And right now we're just falling short.
Getting back to the point of the pitching side versus the hitting side, just given the fact that hitting is reactionary, is it harder to implement that, teach that from a hitting perspective than from a pitching side?
Oh, I think so. I think, and I don't know on a given day if I, like, an area scout is a really hard job in baseball. You know, the major league hitting coach is perhaps the most thankless job in baseball. And, you know, it's hard to coach a guy and say, hey, you see that round thing coming at you at 100? Go hit it. And it's there's a lot of nuance that goes into it. It's in many ways it's a psychologist who happens to sit next to a hitter. Mm-hmm. And these are the times when that is most valuable. And, you know, the fact that Brownie's played at this level, the fact that JD's been with this group now for 4 or 5 years, you know, the fact that our hitters are familiar with our environment. We don't have a lot of new guys in terms of transitioning into, you know, the T-Mobile in April environment. So I don't really write it off to this is our place. The pulled fly ball still leaves T-Mobile. We watched it this weekend.
Right. Yeah, you
know,
you're right.
Courtesy of Michael Bush. But, you know, I think the idea that we need to do something different is we need to lean into what our players do best and get back to that. Because, you know, we've seen this group of guys, JP and Julio and Jorge and Mitch, and these guys have not just been fine major league players, they've been outstanding major league players, and collectively right now they're just not. And we have to get back into helping them be themselves. We don't need to recreate them. We just need to get them back to doing the thing that they do.
It's an exciting day for the club. Jonathan Classe is getting set to make his major league debut. Unfortunately, it comes because of an injury to Dom Canzone. Phenomenal catch, by the way.
Huge.
I mean, he gave it all up for that, man. He didn't slow down until the wall hit him. Pretty impressive. Class A is a guy that we've had a chance to watch in spring. He's, by pipeline, the number 10 prospect for the Mariners. When you think of Jonathan Class A, what do you think of?
Electric tools, you know, in a scouting vernacular. You know, Class A, he's 21 years old. He's another young one. We promoted him pretty aggressively after he left Everett, you know, 20-year-old season last year or 21-year-old season last year. We sent him on to Arkansas. And in a really difficult ballpark to hit in, he did – as a young hitter, you know, he had flaws, and he did it. He hit homers. He stole bases. He's kind of a bit of a three true outcomes player with a fourth spice. That is, he can steal bases by looking at them. You know, he can fly. He's an 80 runner. He's one of the fastest runners that has ever come through our organization, maybe the fastest. He's one of the fastest runners in professional baseball, and he has, you know, his instincts have evolved over time. He signed as a very raw young 16-year-old and 17, I think, by the time he started. He missed a ton of time in the low minors with a lot of soft tissue injuries, and along the way we taught him to switch hit, and that's become a thing for him to the point where it's pretty platoon neutral. He's got power from both sides of the plate. He has been, you know, a dynamic base stealer at the minor league level. He has grown increasingly more comfortable with the notion of running counts and taking his walk, you know, and I think he's let's call it an average hitter with an above average process and real power. You would never know it by looking at him, because he's not going to walk in looking like DK Metcalf or, you know, Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson. I would have just said "The Rock" if it was obvious, but you know, he doesn't walk in looking like this insane, big, bulking athlete. He's incredibly strong. He is. It's like a power pack of dynamite in a 5'9" frame, with explosive tools in terms of 8-run, 60-70 type of raw power. He can hit a ball a long way.
You mentioned young player. He's getting his first taste. What are your expectations when you see him for the first few times here with the club?
You know, yesterday when Dom ran into the wall and left the game, we were quickly in communication with the training room downstairs, finding out what the general thought process was. And it looked painful. You know, yeah. I mean, Goldie hit on it. Walls don't move. And Dom's he went into it hard. Mm-hmm. So we're hoping that it's not a long-term issue, but you know, when we started contemplating the different moves we could make to the roster, and there were, you know, we could have been creative. We could have gone with more of a traditional infielder and just allowed Demo to relocate to the outfield and do that. And that could have been a Ryan Bliss. We could have gone right-hand multi-position with a Samad Taylor. We could have added Cade Marlowe, who's been here before and given us a bit of a jolt. You know, where we ultimately came out on it is, you know, Class A is a switch hitter. He gives us something in the electric category, and he may or may not be ready for the challenge that we're throwing at him, but he is the type of guy that for 3 days or 3 weeks could conceivably give us that kind of energy that just changes the way you feel about, you know, coming to the ballpark every day. And we need that a little bit. You know, I think it's not lost on the players. It's certainly not lost on our fan base. It's not lost on me or our front office or our coaching staff. We're not off to the start we wanted. We can't allow ourselves to wallow in self-pity. You need some energy. And I will say this, that as we sit here today on Jackie Robinson Day, the American League West has done us a little bit of a favor, and they've allowed our slow start to not bury us. And you know, it's important that we not take advantage of that for too long. You know, that it's time for us to do our work and get back into managing our own business instead of asking others to do it for us.
Is that going back to your point of the org taught him how to switch hit? Is that sounds really late in life to learn how to switch hit?
And sometimes the Cardinals used to do this, you know, religiously with anybody who could run. You know, you're going to be a switch hitter.
I'm 27.
Yeah, it's amazing. And in New York, when I was a player, I played with Lance Johnson, who was a left-handed hitter. And I asked him, how did you not, you know, get turned into a switch hitter? He said, I went to college. But the young guys, when they came through the Cardinals system, every one of them, you know, they just you're going to hit on the other side of the plate. And you know, Vince Coleman, Willie McGee, they would all – it's Kurt Ford. I could come up with names of guys that they did it with through the years. And it was – it was a benefit. And, you know, with Class A, it's something he was always interested in. He had a knack for it. And, you know, I think as a general rule, if you can switch hit and you have speed and power, that makes you very unique in the history of the game. You know, you will find switch hitters with speed. You will find switch hitters with power. You're not going to find a ton of them that hit both of those categories. And the advantage that gives you in your lineup, you know, when you get toward the top or the bottom of the lineup and you can today we'll line up. We've got three switch hitters in there, and that's a real advantage in lineup building. So it's good for Jonathan. He was able to adapt to it very quickly, again, without a ton of reps to experience what that's like at game speed, but a super athlete who's had he's shown to have some acumen. You know, he's coachable.
We are very excited to watch him. We've been We've been very impressed on the pitching front with one thing in particular, and that's been the Bryce Miller splitter. Like, for a player to come in with a new pitch that isn't just I'm going to tinker with this, but it's a legitimate weapon and a neutralizer. What have you made of Bryce with that pitch in particular this year?
He's been awesome. And really, it was notable day one of spring training with Bryce. And he's he's confident. He knows he's good. He's got real stuff. He's got about a year of experience now. So a lot of the things that you want to see pitchers build off of, now he's got a legitimate non-fastball out pitch. And, you know, I think when you are preparing as an opposing team, and you're getting ready for your game against the Mariners to face Bryce Miller, you know, the 2023 version of Bryce, you know, the out pitch is the heater. You know, hey, when this guy gets ahead, he's going to elevate his heater. Look for the elevated heater and eliminate the one over the top of the zone. And now you've got him back into, you know, his secondary pitches over the plate are going to be less impactful than that fastball. What that splitter does, it creates something new in their mind. He's thrown it to the righties and the lefties. It makes his slider better by virtue of the fact that now they can't just eliminate pitches, you know. And now he's been able to – I think his slider, too, has improved. And, you know, he's locating his slider better. It's been more effective in the strike zone because the splitter exists. And when you – and it's not because they look like the same pitch. It's because you have in your mind now as a hitter, you've not been able to eliminate pitches. And he's shown the ability to throw it for a strike, which is not an easy thing to do. I think it's really made him a different pitcher in the early going. He certainly looks like a more dangerous seven-inning model than maybe he would have been last year. Last year, Bryce was more often than not going to be a five and change guy. And as soon as they got to the point where they ran a pitch count or, you know, the third time through the order, when they were able to identify, all right, lay off the high heater. Now there's another thing. And as a result of the split, you know, now the high heater the third time through the lineup is just as effective as it was the third time because they're not, you know, they're not dialed in on one strength. They have to think about the others.
It's been amazing to watch Miller. For that reason, also Logan Gilbert, I feel like, you know, he is doing things he was not able to do 2 years ago, right? I feel like in the three starts we've seen him, he's leaned on basically a different pitch in all three of his starts. It's been amazing to watch the short-term progression of Miller, but the long-term progression of Logan Gilbert along these same lines.
You know, I think it's both of those guys are great examples of this. Yeah, you know, they're both growth-minded. They're smart about pitching. They want to be better and learn more. And it's the way our pitching group is wired. You know, Trent and Woody and you know, previously Max, now Matt Pierpont at the minor league levels, they all think that way. Like, let's figure out ways to get better. And, you know, Logan Gilbert, if you would have watched Logan Gilbert in 2021 when he debuted in the big leagues and pitched his first, let's call it 4 months as a big leaguer, or about that, 5 months, and you would have envisioned a time where it wasn't going to be only about his fastball. Mm. You would have been going out on a real limb at that time.
You had to squint pretty hard to get to picture that.
There were days in 2021, you know, multiple of them. And I don't know how many off the top of my head did Logan start 20 or 24 games in that season, whatever it was. in many of those games, Logan was a very one-and-a-half pitch type of pitcher, you know, and he would thrive on what I would call a well above average fastball ride at the top of the zone and a desire to consistently pound the strike zone. So he was routinely ahead and largely doing it with a pitch, you know, and could pitch to any lineup with it. And now his menu is as long as anybody we have. He just keeps adding something new. He's curious. He tinkers. I think he's smart enough to know what's usable and what's not. His work habits are off the charts. And, you know, when Logan sets his mind to something, he usually doesn't just do it. He becomes excellent at it. And, you know, he was kind of a sneaky, you know, like all-star Cy Young candidate coming in. And yeah. I don't think you mm-hmm. really change your mind after watching the first couple of weeks of the season. You know, Logan's got a lot of weapons, and he has such a high pitcher's IQ. He knows his opponent, and you know, like his preparation is never going to be short. I'm excited about where he's at. The funny thing is, you'll get into situations where in your mind's eye, you lean back. Oh, just let it rip. Throw the 97 at the top of the zone. You know, and it might be like fifth on his list of things to do in that moment. And as a catcher who I once played with told me, if you don't know what you're going to throw, they certainly don't, you know? So what the, rip it, let it rip.
I was looking at Fangraphs. I was looking at Stuff Plus, and like Gilbert is dotting like top 10 and all these different pitches, but, and I know we're three starts in, right? But the cutter, he's got the top cutter according to Stuff Plus on Fangraphs. Like how real is this cutter that we're seeing?
It looks pretty real to me. You know, it's a sample size thing.
Right.
But we saw it developing in the spring. We've seen the level of confidence with which he throws it. I wouldn't put anything past Logan, and it works from his arm slot. You know, it's as a general rule, the one that I have to say I'm most surprised by is the sinker. You know, someone who is as high a release as high a slot as Logan typically doesn't find, you know, that pitch. He's done a remarkable job with it as well. You know, the cutter is something that works, you know, from his slot and the way he does it. It blends very well with his four-seam fastball. The combination of a riding four-seamer and a hard cutter, it's kind of death on right-handed hitters. And the lefties can't get the ball off of them because they're looking at that ride, and then here it comes, and it takes that left-hand turn. And he's doing it at high enough velocity. He throws it hard enough mm-hmm. that you really can't adjust to it. It's not like a sweeper where you get to, all right, there's the break. It's just kind of darts on you. And it seems very viable right now.
Yes,
and,
it does.
You know, as do a lot of his pitches.
Well, Jerry, we appreciate the time. We are hopeful that the next time we talk, we'll be speaking of a 15-game run that the Mariners are on, very different than the first 15. So we're looking forward to that time.
Amen to that.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.